This is the Industry Insider from the Association for Electronic Music.
The AFEM Industry Insider.
Hello and welcome to Industry Insider, the podcast by the Association for Electronic Music. We are the not-for-profit trade body representing over 290 member companies over 40 countries across the world, celebrating the best aspects of the business and culture of electronic music. This podcast looks at a variety of different subjects, from business to culture to best practice and education. And I think today's topic really encapsulates all three of those, really. I'm joined today by one of our members, Sarah Jane Nicholson, founder of Paradise Worldwide and Africa Rising Music Conference, who this podcast is in collaboration with. And today we'll be exploring the opportunities for artists, brands and labels in Africa. I think this is a really interesting topic because it really underlines the global nature of dance music. And I think having an opportunity to learn from people on the ground there about what the opportunities and potential collaborations could be is a very interesting moment in time. And with Africa Rising Music Conference coming up, the timing could not be better. So thank you to our guests for joining us today. So Sarah Jane, over to you.
Thank you to AFEM for hosting us. I'd love to introduce today Tumi Mote, Senior Marketing Manager, Culture and Experiential at Jägermeister. Tumi, please tell us a little bit about how did you initially tap into the music ecosystem of Africa?
Thanks, Eshen. Yeah, hello to everybody listening and watching from all corners of the world. Pleasure to be here with you guys. To your direct question, I've been fortunate enough to have a quite extensive and long history within entertainment as it was. Obviously, my very first time being an artist and looking at culture and creative cultures comes from my lived experience, starting from me being a seven-year-old, performing for the first time in then Standard Bank Arena, then moving and graduating into looking at culture through the other lenses, where I'm working for global brands. And it was then it came to light that, you know, there's a space and time for brand and culture where they meet in the middle. So it's been a long journey, both from the lens of being in culture and being a creative artist myself, and a very long 15-year plus change career working for global brands and looking at it from the other side. So yeah, it's now that connection point between the two where I find myself currently playing in that space.
And what a wonderful connection point that is. And I must say, I'm a huge fan of your work and what the brand is doing for African talent on a worldwide scale. I want to talk a little bit about the export and the role that you have played as a brand that is not only engaging with culture, but also pioneering the way for local African acts to perform on the global stages. Tell us a little bit about how and what you're doing with relation to that.
Fantastic. Yeah, so this is something that I've been trying to champion for a long time. Again, having the advantage point from both artists or creative community as well as from brand side, understanding what both need and want. I noticed, and I'm not in isolation with this because there are also other great collectives that are doing similar work, but we realize there's a need state for exporting African culture, African creative culture, and it comes with a certain barrier of entry. And the answer to that usually is where the purse strings lay. And that's where the role of brands kind of come in. So what I've been doing more recently and quite focused right now within the brand of Jägermeister is finding tools and channels where we can bridge that gap. There's a lot of ears globally that want and are interested in African music, right? Electronic music and its evolution as it's kind of come to now, and also the creative cultural spectrum, right? Because it's quite wide, as we can appreciate. So there's a massive audience that is interested in that globally. There's lots of opportunities from brands globally to tap into this. And what we've done is we've now decided, okay, fantastic. How do we play that role of that connecting tissue between the local artistry that and local culture that lives on the base level, on the ground, in South Africa, in Kenya, in Nigeria, being some of the main markets, but actually as a totality of an Africa conversation, which is the spectrum, or at least which is the space I look after. So we've created platforms, we've created touring opportunities where we're connecting artists with festivals, events, further than that, music industry players on a global scale. So it's been a journey of identifying what those opportunities are, the interest level, knowing very well that the local community struggles at a financial perspective, and understanding that brands have the might, the strength, capacity to close that gap. And right now, Jägermeister is one of the brands that I'm using and I'm moving forward with, championing this very conversation. But there is opportunity across the spectrum, across multiple different brands that do exist. Yeah.
Brilliant. And to me, I mean, at the core of what you're doing is sustainable partnerships, and it's 100%. Admirable to see. I know, we all know that labels, booking agents are looking to Africa to sign new talent more so than ever before. I want to ask you, what advice would you give for young brands or labels who are looking to really tap into the African market in an authentic and long-term way?
I think my very first piece of advice, or thinking out loud, would definitely be, we all understand business, right? As brands, we understand the power and how to navigate within a brand or within a business context. Avoid the very common mistake of making it too much of a transaction, right? Culture speaks with creativity. Culture is points of expression. And culture speaks a different language to a corporate business setting. By this, I mean, if you're a young brand or even an established brand, to be honest, I see this more as an issue with bigger global brands, realize that it's quite important to speak culture's language. So avoid making it too transactional. Why do I say that? This is mainly because when you make it hyper-transactional, I give you money, you give me X and or Y, usually in the sense of credibility or exposure or reach, whatever your respective KPIs are. As soon as you make it hyper-transactional, then you need to understand that the scope of your relationship sits and ends after the transaction is completed. Where I think the great opportunity is to come in with an authentic, a genuine need state to support culture. When you come in with a more organic approach, you speak the language, make sure you understand the regional context, you make sure you understand what it is that is needed from the other side of the fence, it really lines you up to having a more long-term, more sustainable interaction with these artists. If I can, I'll break it down to its simplest form. Instead of just throwing money at a solution or at me buying the latest and hottest, I'm a piano or electronic artist, here, 6 months duration, I require X months of posts, go make my brand cool. Be very prepared as a brand that is the start and end of your interaction. Where we believe you do it differently comes with doing it authentically. You start with understanding what the culture needs, and then you give it to them in an authentic way where you have a mutual benefit. Culture gets X, Y, and Z from brand, and brand gets X, Y, and Z from culture. And you look at the long-term, continuous engagement. So step two would be the frequency of engagement. I think if you kind of apply these small little things, you'll find that you'll have more sustained engagement, more authentic engagement with communities. You'll tend to find a bigger ROI than a black and white spreadsheet can ever give you, right?
Wow. To me, I think you've answered my next question, and that was, an example of how an international brand has sort of come into the territory and created something that is authentic, sustainable, and engaging the needs. And I guess with any point of entry into new market, that's of course top of mind. And Africa is on the tip of everyone's tongue at the moment. We see you are coming to IMS with a wonderful artist. Tell us a little bit about that collaboration.
Fantastic. And thank you for bringing that up. It's something that I'm particularly proud of. We've tested the grounds within the project, and now we're formalizing it as a strong standalone concept. We call it the Jägermeister Global Pass. Again, its objective is very clear. We want to bridge that gap between a need state from community and leveraging the brand to make sure that it also wins. IMS is a fantastic example. I love that you brought that up as an example, because IMS is sitting there with some of the most influential and most impactful community business leaders, managers within the music industry. Now, for any young artist, just to have a seat around the table is absolutely epic. That's the need state from culture. The role brand is playing is to bring and to facilitate that bridge or that point where we're taking young artists who are on the up and up, you know, they're hungry for it, but would never ordinarily have the opportunity to get onto that platform. So IMS specifically will be one of the first global pass initiatives. Young K-Mat, she's absolutely moving. She's really shifting culture. She has her own personality. She has that X factor that, you know, we've got people from the record labels, which we all know and understand. And we're now looking to just put her around the right tables where she's able to sit down, take notes, shake the right hands within the industry. And we look at this as an opportunity to give more than just transactional participation. It's value for the artist, for the brand. Where we win is being able to tell a fantastic story. We're able to be that catalyst of culture. We're able to do it at a grassroots level and connect it on a global scale. That's the difference. And of course, Global Pass will be doing this throughout the course of the year with a very strategic partnership with with ARMC, which we're very proud of. And we'll be doing this on many, many, many different platforms and finding new talent from across the continent and giving them similar opportunities. Let's get them into a studio with global producers. Let's get them to shake hands with some of the leading artist bookers around the world. Let's find these opportunities and let's bring communities together.
Absolutely brilliant to me. And, you know, our topic today is understanding the opportunities for artists, brands and labels. And so if any of our AFEM members, I say our because, of course, we're a member and very proud. If any of those members are at IMS and they're wanting to connect with Tumi about this wonderful opportunity or our artist that is going to be over there, K-Mat, please get in touch. She is definitely ready for the global stage. And we thank you very much, Tumi, for your time today.
There's a win-win for everybody. It's just about connecting those dots. So opportunities there. I thank you again for your time. And I'm hoping we will meet a lot of interesting faces, shake a lot of hands at IMS. And let's tell great stories, both for brands and let's push culture.
We're moving on to a wonderful cultural entrepreneur, cultural advocate, label owner and founder, artist, and someone I'm equally a massive fan of. Welcome today, Jackie Queens.
Hi, SJ. Thank you for having me to be part of this conversation. I'm really excited to be here and looking forward to chatting it up.
Awesome. So, Jackie, I'd love to start with a quick background intro. You know, you've been championing not only female, Black femme voices, underrepresented voices across the globe for quite some time now. Tell us a little bit about your journey up until this point and what has inspired you and this drive.
Sure. So my career in the music industry started as a house music vocalist. So I just kind of decided one day that I would record some songs, and little did I know that that would set me off onto a very interesting path. Initially, it was just about making music. And once I was in the industry, I started to experience and notice a variety of injustices, if I can call it that, especially as a house music vocalist, as a woman. And so the work that I subsequently started to do mostly stemmed from that. So I started the label because it was taking a while for people whom I'd sent my music to release music. So I decided I'll start the label because I wanted to release my own music. And then I started throwing parties because I noticed that women weren't getting booked on lineups. So I threw parties. And then I started managing because I found an artist who I really loved through one of my parties. And that's how I kind of got into management. And I've done a few things, you know, in and around that. I'm the co-director of She Said So, which is a chapter here in South Africa, based in South Africa, but it's a global organization of women and, you know, allies who are determined to make a difference in the industry for marginalized artists and creatives. Yeah, so I'm pretty much doing a lot of things, and they're really just based around imagining a different world and a different way of working and believing that it's possible.
Wonderful. I love that. Reimagining how to build bridges, how to create that connection capital globally. I'm 100% with you, Jackie. And you mentioned something quite interesting there. And that was, you know, that you weren't able to reach labels. And so you set up yourself independently. And I'm interested to know, what do you perceive or feel are the biggest obstacles for independent artists from South Africa or the African continent in the electronic scene to reach those global audiences, for example?
The biggest obstacle is probably like accessing the services that enable you to move your music. Because I feel like in South Africa, at least within the Afro house or the house music space, we've always had access to international labels. Like, you know, it's sort of part of the course that you create music and you shop it around and stuff like that. So that hasn't necessarily been a barrier in a sense. I mean, obviously there's a lot of people releasing music, and so, you know, the chances of a label picking up your music, you know, it's obviously you're competing against a bunch of other people. But once the music is actually in a label's hands, typically, you know, the labels are small labels, independent labels. They don't necessarily have a lot of budget to push the track, you know, and so there's really that gap in, like, once a label has your music, how do you get it out there and how do you get it, you know, into different ears? You know, there's DJ promo pools, there's all this other stuff, there's the marketing, and, you know, so I think that in itself is quite a difficult thing to do once you have the music and it's sort of out there in the world. And that is basically, you know, it's based on a lot of things in terms of like access to resources and connections also. So I think that's probably, at least in my experience, that is probably one of the biggest challenges. It's like once the music is out or it's, you know, it's on its way into the world, what do you do to get a significant number of people to have access to it beyond just sort of posting it on your socials and, you know, the work that you do as an artist.
Wonderful. Thanks, Jackie. I mean, you've been working both locally and internationally, collaborating with brands, labels, festivals, and so on. If you were to give advice to an international stakeholder who is trying to tap into the market in a sustainable way, what from your experience would be sort of your top three touch points?
I think the first thing would be to go into a market, or at least if you're planning to, is to listen. I feel, you know, people come with ideas, which is great. They're wonderful ideas, but sometimes they may not necessarily be applicable to the environment that you're trying to engage in. So I think, you know, connecting with people who have expertise within those markets, to really guide and give advice that is culturally sensitive and culturally relevant, I feel it's very important. I also think that it helps to think about the work in a collaborative way, as opposed to using a top-down approach, and to think about the communities and the artists and the creatives that you're working with as people who have something inherently valuable to give. I often find sometimes when working with people, it's like, you know, people come in and they approach the situation as if this is a huge opportunity for you and you should be grateful for it. But it's like, you're here because I have something. Otherwise, you would not be here. So to think about the artists, the creatives, the environment, the people you're working with in a collaborative way, but more specifically to understand that their value is inherent. It's not something you are going to create with your project or whatever it is that you're bringing to the table. And the other thing I would say is, you know, which is something that Tumi said, which is to think in a sustainable way. I think, you know, creating projects or, you know, just sort of working with people in different environments or markets, it's very important to think about how you will build on the thing that you're doing. So think of it in a sort of long-term sense. I mean, I like to advise people to think in 3 years. You start with one block and then you build and you build, you know, it's like building a house. So, you know, to sort of think about it in that sense, which I think helps it to become less extractive in my experience, you know, projects and sort of initiatives that have been run with a more sort of long-term outlook tend to be more enriching than ones that happen like once off. And I mean, obviously, that's really just dependent on, you know, a number of things. But where it's possible, try to start by thinking, how can we keep this going for a number of years? And how can we build, like compound the work that we're doing? Yeah.
100%. And of course, you know, developing African talent offshore is a costly endeavor. And so I'm interested to know from you, having negotiated several label deals, what is your take on, and as you've mentioned, building sustainable careers, what is your take on labels licensing music and building up artists offshore, but then, you know, requesting options or not wanting to sign only single deals? Is there something that, is there any advice you could give to labels with regards to deal structures, considering it is costly to develop acts from Africa into the world?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the thing that anyone who starts a label or builds a label has to confront in any way. Yeah, it's a difficult one. It's a very difficult one because, I mean, you're like, it depends on the model, like of the label. Like you often find like a lot of labels are just taking music and they're putting it out. And, you know, that in its own way is helpful to artists, you know, and it depends on the capacity that the label has to actually support people. You know, I know from my own experience that it's very hard, no matter how passionate you are and you really want to help people, you know, to actually develop an act through a label, you know, like, unless you have a bunch of resources. So I think what I've come to realize in the past few years, I think, is to try and work with a model where you're kind of supporting artists who have like a certain level of, or have reached a certain level that can be, you know, amplified in a sense. Like it's very difficult to work sometimes with artists who don't necessarily or not necessarily at the sort of level where they can capitalize on the opportunities that are in front of them. And it's not to say that they can't, it just means that it's about timing. So I kind of feel like, you know, when I speak to people who work overseas, it's like people really just want to do the best that they can to develop artists. And there's just so much talent out there. And I kind of feel like the best that you could do is to try and find the balance between, like, you know, presenting really great new work, but then also where there's an opportunity to build a long-term relationship with an artist who's showing a lot of promise and is at a level where they can capitalize on those opportunities. Again, compounding, like, build a deal that's going to help them grow, you know, from the first release until the maybe the third or the fourth or the fifth. But I understand that that's very difficult.
Thanks, Jackie. I'd love to segue into the concept of Africa as an opportunity market. IFPI has just announced their reporting, and South Africa again remains the largest music market in sub-Saharan Africa, accounting for 75% of the region's revenues as of 2024. But we see labels like Gondwana, Owasso, and other electronic artists popping up from East Africa. I'd love to hear your take on the concept of Africa and tapping into Africa. We know South Africa is a hotspot, but which other territories are you experiencing as hotspots and why?
I mean, Kenya's all been a very good example of that for some time now. Like, I think Gondwana is about 5 years old. And, you know, within the sort of, like, seeing those statistics, you don't actually, like, see how the work is being done in different places, for example. So, like, you mentioned Gondwana, like, and I know for a long time they were probably the one label that had a really great live sort of platform or event platform for South African DJs to play in Kenya. And for the longest time, there wasn't that sort of reciprocal motion that was happening. So I've always really appreciated the work that they've done in sort of bringing South African and artists from all over, you know, into the market and introducing them into the market for sure. So they are also very exciting news as well. The club that's there, like there's some really great, interesting stuff that's happening in Kenya for sure, and the festivals as well. I would say Uganda, obviously with Nyege Nyege, but still, I think in terms of electronic music, there's just, you know, for me, it's like, it's the diversity of the sound that's sort of coming from Uganda. It's not necessarily a sound that's very popular, but you know, it's interesting, it's exciting. And I know in December, the Moonshine Collective from Montreal was there. I mean, they've always, like, Uganda's just been that space where there's been this conversation, global conversation, like consistently, even though it's not necessarily the first place that people would sort of think of, you know, to put on the map when it comes to electronic music countries in Africa. So I would definitely say Kenya, Uganda, Nigeria, of course. I mean, traditionally, electronic music hasn't necessarily had a very strong foothold there, but you're seeing collectives like Group Therapy come up, Spectrum. You know, there's a little growing community of electronic music enthusiasts that are sort of, you know, where you get like a really good mix of like sort of clubs and then like community, you know, sort of queer centered, like led events, which is really like cool to see. So I would say those are like the three, like my top three at the moment.
Wonderful. Thanks, Jackie. And my final question for you, you're an advocate for so many things, and something that, you know, is quite interesting for me, representing Africa Rising Music Conference and working with a lot of internationals, is often we see African artists are booked for lineups offshore, but they're in fact, you know, potentially not from Africa or carrying the sound. What advice do you give to stakeholders offshore, labels, bookers, promoters, agents, to authentically represent the culture? And what advice do you give them so that we can carry the culture in a way that is true to its sound and where it comes from?
I think the first one is to book African artists. If you have a stage that says Afro House, book African artists to play the stage. I think also to be cognizant or understanding of like some of the barriers that are in the way for African artists to take up opportunities internationally and perhaps offer more support. So things like visas, you know, huge barrier to playing overseas, to touring, to, you know, so it's difficult. It is way more difficult to book an artist from a country where the passport is, you know, on a list or whatever the case may be. But it's still work, you know, that is necessary, I would say. So, yeah, I think that would be my biggest, you know, sort of piece of advice. It's just to, yeah, like the music is moving. We're seeing it, especially like in my sort of wheelhouse in Afro House, you know, lots of young people who've been making brilliant music from all over the world and their music is taking off, but they're not. So I think, you know, trying to create space in which young producers and artists, you know, who are from Africa can actually be seen as opposed to just being heard would be ideal. It's not easy. It will take a lot more resources in terms of labor, probably time, money for sure. And maybe find partners who can help you do that, like brands and other people who are interested in exporting the talent.
Well, thank you, Jackie. And there you've heard it from the Queen herself. And I do believe you will be at IMS too speaking, correct?
Yes, I'm speaking on a panel about this very thing, about how Afro House has taken off and the African artists are not benefiting from it.
Wonderful. So if you do want to catch Jackie at IMS and explore further opportunities relating to her work as an advocate, not only for the South African or African music space, but femme, queer, underrepresented, please do get in touch. And thank you, Jackie. We are going to move over now to Chris DeFoss. Welcome, Chris.
Thank you, SJ. Thanks, Finley. Thanks for having me.
Chris, you have been a DJ, event producer, co-founder of Sexy Groovy Love. Over a decade of hard work, congratulations on all the success so far. Would love to unpack your journey up until this point. So please do share a little bit about how it all began.
Thank you. I always had a big passion for events, even when I was a kid. The excitement around a parent's birthday or something like that, I always loved that. And when I left school, I found myself at dance music festivals, at clubs, and just having these experiences that I think we've all felt, you know, and I was so drawn to it. And I just knew that that's what I wanted to do. So our first ever event we actually did was a yacht party, and it grew into Sexy Groovy Love. And now 14 years down the line, we've got a portfolio of events based in Cape Town. So including Plet Rage, Sexy Groovy Love, Retreat Yourself, Alcazar. And then we do a number of, wouldn't say once-off shows, but license deals with brands like Injuna Deep. Last year we hosted Rumors. And yeah, and really just doing what I love. We always say it's, you know, we're in the entertainment space, but it's actually the happiness business. And that's what it takes me back to why I started this all in the first place.
So you're working with a number of internationals, bringing them in. Of course, we have a number of, I'm sure, members that are going to be listening today, and their exact objective is, and most of the community looking to Africa is to say, how do you tap in? How do you connect with someone like Christophos if you know, they don't know about you? How did those promoters get hold of you, or was it you reaching out to them?
We've always reached out to them. You know, Africa is definitely, you know, exploding and on the rise. But for most of the artists that we reach out to and the labels that we reach out to, you know, we're so far away geographically. So it has definitely been a bit of an obstacle for us. You know, and Juna Deep, they, for example, Africa was always on their radar. They had a number of collaborations with local artists. And when we approached them, they were so keen to get involved. So we just finished our second iteration with them in March. We did Cape Town and Johannesburg, a host of top South African artists on the stage alongside some international headliners, which was really, really great and well received. You know, to answer your question, if people do want to reach out to us, they can find us on any of our channels or our websites or our social channels. But generally, we are the ones that are pitching the ideas and the concepts to them.
Wonderful. And Chris, what would you say are some of the cultural and logistical nuances that outsiders often underestimate when trying to enter into the South African music scene?
There is a different culture here. You know, South Africa has got, well, Africa in general has got a very youthful population. So there's this like thriving youthful creative movement happening across the continent. Whereas in other continents, it's a little bit the other way around. So I think the first thing is, you know, try and really understand the culture. Don't just come in and, you know, want to do something, like really do a deep dive and understand what's going on and what's happening on the ground floor before just coming in with some type of a concept. Because, you know, things that are working in the US and in Europe aren't necessarily going to work in Africa, or yes, they will, you know. So that's the first one that I've always found. We, you know, I mentioned it already, but the geographical location of South Africa is super, super tricky. Obviously, it opens up a lot of opportunity in Northern and Central Africa, because that's not such a far way away. But then you've got the infrastructure limitations with like how the transport routes and the flight routes into these locations. But that's one of the biggest barriers that we've had. Deals have literally fallen through our fingertips just because, oh, sorry, it's just too far to travel and we have to be in Europe and then we have to be there. So I'd say those are the two biggest ones.
Brilliant. And from a creative economy perspective, of course, we know in Europe and other parts of the world, all the music economy is supported by various funding institutions. And of course, in Southern Africa, we don't have that. How do you navigate this from a brand perspective and from a funding perspective?
Timmy said it very well earlier. We need to partner with brands. You know, with every single one of the projects that we own, we wouldn't do it without brand support. It's literally as simple as that. You know, when we started, we were very lucky that we didn't lose everything that we had. But, you know, now that we've been in the game for a bit longer, we understand, you know, the risk-reward ratio a lot more. But to put it plainly, like, we would not be able to do what we do without the brand support. It's really great when we speak to a brand and we show them the vision and they can align with that, because that's what brings it to life, you know. So with the example of Njuna Deep, Heineken and Diageo, led by Don Julio, we could not have achieved that tour if it wasn't for the support of those brands. We're busy working with Pernod Ricard on another big tour at the end of the year, and thank God they see the vision, and thank God they are willing to put their money on the line to support that vision. So in South Africa, you know, that's what it is. You can have private funding, but because of where our economy is at, we can't be charging European or US-based ticket prices. It just isn't possible. And many of the artists, the international artists that we bring down, you used to be able to plead poverty with them. But now, because there's such like a big artist boom after the pandemic, you have to pay their actual fees. So you're paying US and Euro-based fees with the Rand, which took a dip recently as well, and you're charging South African prices. So for us, we actually just won't go forward with the project unless there is brand support there. And we're in a very fortunate enough position that we've built great relationships with many brands over the past decade and a bit to actually bring these visions to life.
Thanks, Chris. And I guess as a promoter, a cultural entrepreneur, you've built these as Sexy Groovy Love over many, many years. We see entities or setups like Kunya, for example, who have, you know, built over a couple of years. And you're talking about Njuna Deep, you said it was the second edition, correct?
Correct.
What is your feeling with regards to the experience of the label or artist-centric event versus a more festival-orientated event? What are we seeing the audiences in South Africa really wanting more of?
Well, we've seen the success of Kunya with Shimza, right? You know, the artist or the human is always going to be bigger than the brand. And there are millions of examples of this around the world. Like, Elon Musk is bigger than Tesla, Donald Trump's bigger than the Republican Party, you know, and so on and so on. And I think that had one aspect to do with their success. I mean, I'm a massive fan. I think the music is incredible, and they've created these cultural hotspots where, like, there's just like an abundance of good vibes, good music, and everyone is just having such a great time. So I feel like that's, you know, it's got two factors to it, but I feel like, you know, with their success, I feel like Shims has had such a massive part of that. If he wasn't the face of Kunye and it was just Kunye, would the brand be as big? You know, I'm not really sure. Yeah, but really, really good for them. As I say, I'm a massive, massive fan. You know, with us, we've built our brands with no specific face or artist. It's not as artist-centric. We always like to mix up our lineups, keep them incredibly inclusive and diverse. So we've also seen some success over the years with that approach. But as you mentioned, a brand like Kunya, they achieved that in a couple of years. I think it's been 3 or 4 years. So it is a new way of looking at things. And, you know, we have explored that avenue as well. We have looked to partner with certain artists to bring something similar like that to life. We haven't landed the plane on anything yet. I guess it just, it all needs to make sense, right? You don't just want to do something for the sake of doing it.
Awesome. Well, there's an opportunity right there. If anyone has any ideas, you know who to call. Chris, we've talked a little bit about geographical obstacles being the southernmost tip of Africa. We've talked about the economy and our rand, you know, paying dollar fees. I want to segue into cultural differences or understandings with regards to bookings or stakeholders you've worked with. Do you have any advice for the international market who wants to work in South Africa as to their approach or their expectations of us as an electronic music community?
I think, you know, understanding the difficulties and challenges that we have in South Africa is key. And I think a lot of people do. I think a lot of the people around the world do. But I think, like, really deep diving and just understanding what is an expected ticket price, you know, for a big headline show or just, you know, some local artist, whatever the case may be. I think really understanding that range is very key. We've been down the road before where as soon as you get down to the numbers and what you could realistically charge for something like this, then a deal sort of falls through. So I really think, like, just understanding our economical landscape is so important. And, you know, there is so much opportunity here. Jackie was just speaking about, like, this abundance of artists that are getting exported, and there is so much more. I feel like, you know, the real opportunity is not, you know, sure, people can come to South Africa and we can bring experiences that you can only find in Europe or the States or in Ibiza or something to South Africa. And that's great because you're now giving the local community exposure to something they wouldn't necessarily have. I feel the massive opportunity, though, is the other way around. I don't even think we've scratched the tip of the iceberg with the artists that are coming out of our country. So I really think, like, the gates are just going to continue opening, and we're just going to be seeing more and more people popping up that are, you know, representing our country.
Wonderful. And I couldn't agree more, Chris. Africa to the World, I always say, is sort of my or our slogan at Africa Rising Music Conference. And we certainly look up to you and what you've done over many years with your event. So I'd like to close off with, you know, any closing advice that you have or anything that you'd like to say to our AFM members.
Sure. I think the biggest obstacles that South African artists are facing are obstacles that no one in the world really understands. Like, one plain simple is, you know, reliable electricity, right? Jackie spoke about, like, visa requirements and that sort of thing. So I feel like offering support to our local artists and our local community with the basic fundamentals is only going to speed up, you know, what we're talking about here. So, you know, people are always wondering, like, how they could get involved or something like that. You know, I don't know exactly what it is, but that is, you know, a fundamental struggle that a lot of people have in the country. So I think awareness is a really good point to that. And thankfully to platforms like Spotify, we are getting access to a lot more artists, and you can really find artists that you couldn't really find many years ago. So I think giving exposure to the artists and just, you know, continuing to support them. Thank you very much for your time, guys.
Thank you very much, everyone. I couldn't agree more. To more opportunity, to more building bridges, to learning from each other. If you haven't already checked us out, we are Africa Rising Music Conference. We're taking place on the 22nd and 23rd of May. Again, thank you to our wonderful panelists today. And I would hand over to Finley of AFM.
Thank you very much, Sarah Jane. And thank you to our panelists for participating in this episode of Industry Insider. We will put the links to all of the speakers and their companies in the description of this podcast. So if you'd like to learn more, simply go to the where you're listening to this podcast and find out more. I think the next episode will be on marketing in the electronic sector. So if you've got €500 to spend on your marketing budget for a new record, where is that best spent? And you'll hear from a variety of different members looking into that insight. This episode was perfect, and it touched exactly on what I think is beautiful about AFM and the network effect. Everything from the value of the South African rand to the scene in Uganda. I mean, how diverse can you get there? So I really enjoyed the insight. Thank you to the participants today. Thank you for listening. If you'd like to learn more, you can always email membership@afem.org.net, and we will see you next time. Thank you very much.
This is the AFEM Industry Insider,
the podcast from the Association for Electronic Music.